The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Welcome back to the programme at 9.26. The text number is 51551. You can email ryan at rte.ie. I'm delighted to welcome Fiona Gratzer to studios. Good morning to you, Fiona.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you. And you are the... Unislim is the business, isn't it? Family business.
It's correct. My mum founded Unislim way back in 1972. Actually, after she gave birth to me, she was over 3 stone overweight. And she just wanted to return to her pre-pregnancy weight. And she got a few friends together, 9 actually, in fact, in her local school hall. And she talked them through their weight loss. And about 12 weeks later, they'd all lost their weight. And she was delighted with herself, went back to being a school teacher. And people picked up on the story. They heard there was a lady in Newry who could talk weight off you. And I promise you she would today. She's so inspiring.
She would talk weight off you.
She would literally talk it off you. She'd look at you now, I can tell you. Not that you need to lose
any. No. I must have had a conversation with her in another life.
I talked to her a long time ago. I know. I hear you like a sweet tooth. But,
I do. Yeah. Go on anyway. Tell me about your mom.
So basically, she was the woman who talked weight off you, and people wanted to have her classes everywhere. And this is how Unislim began. It was really a community-based weight loss club to help people live a healthier lifestyle.
Yeah.
And today, now 47 years later, Unislim is going strong. We've got over 300 classes all over Ireland. We've got a community of fantastic members, great leaders, wonderfully inspiring people, helping people to just live a healthier lifestyle by eating good food and exercising some more and looking after your mindset and your mental health as well, which is really
important. It's evolved. We've not much to talk about, but just while we're here, I just find it intriguing how good living, good health, healthy mind, healthy body, has become so de rigueur in the last 5-10 years. But your mum was ahead of the curve, really.
Absolutely.
Wasn't she?
She was a pioneer, and it was always part of the Unislim ethos, was a very holistic lifestyle, because they all feed into each other. You know, when you're feeling good in your mind and your body, you're going to make better choices in the food that you eat, and they all really are interlinked.
Yeah. It's amazing, because I found my head very cluttered yesterday. I had an awful lot going on in terms of just work and the universe, and I just needed a quick shot of the pier. You know, what I call it, the pier is my thing. It's like some people go to mass, you know, and I just came off the pier after about, 25-30 minutes. I felt better already.
You never ever regret exercising.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's the best thing about it. You know, sometimes I think you can sit at home and you can sit on the sofa. You can.
Yeah, there's too much. That sedentary thing isn't great.
You can watch whatever Netflix, and you can make every excuse not to go outside. It's raining or whatever, but you will never ever regret exercising. But you will regret sitting on the sofa doing nothing at home.
Let me ask you a bit about yourself, because your story it's intriguing in many ways because of your mum and your dad and that story that you just mentioned there. But is Agnes your mum? Mum's name, by the way.
Yes, Agnes McCourt.
Well, it was your mum's. Agnes McCourt. But let's talk a little bit about yourself, because you had, the way you met your husband, Uwe.
Yes.
Was fascinating. You were just 24 years old.
That's
and you decided, I'm off to see the world.
Yeah, I went on my big world tour.
Where did you go?
Well, I didn't get very far when I bumped into him, that's for sure.
Where was that?
I met in Malaysia, and I'd really left Ireland about 3 weeks. And myself and my friend Micah Baumhoff, who I was travelling around the world with, we went to an island called Langkawi, which way back 7 years ago that was there was no alcohol on the island. Don't ask me how these Irish girls ended up on this island for weeks. All the islands in all the world.
Yes.
And but it was a beautiful island, and we decided we'd chill there for a week. And we, at the time, there was only electricity for 2 hours a day. There was no hot water, and was really just really like a desert in Ireland. It was fabulous, absolutely beautiful. And we were sitting there one day, and we were playing cards. We had nothing else to do. Literally, we were just playing cards and having the chats, drinking probably pineapple juice. And a taxi drove up to this beach hut. We were literally in beach huts. It wasn't a hotel. It was very much backpacking. And the taxi, we were all action because it was a taxi. We hadn't seen a taxi in days. We hadn't seen anybody. He was like... And we looked around, and the door opened, and this tall, blonde, godlike looking fella, a bloke I'd never seen the like of in my life, absolutely so handsome, just stepped out of the car. And myself and Micah, the card table literally spun up into the air, nearly hit the ceiling, because we were literally going, did you see that? We were kicking each other's shins. We were just like, we couldn't believe it. So we were like, whoa, what the hell? And it turns out...
Sounds like the cartoon.
It's like we couldn't believe it. Yeah, I mean, how did this guy just land in our beach hut? Anyway, so his name was Uwe, and he was travelling around the world himself, but he was going from New Zealand back to Europe. And we fell in love, and we ended up travelling around Asia together. Not for long, for about 3 weeks. And we had no mobile phones, obviously. We didn't exchange telephone numbers. So
you kind of jumped away there from me for a second, because you were playing cards and then this Adonis arrived car. And then you didn't get to anything other than you said we fell in love. I threw that away very quickly.
I kind of bypassed a couple of details there.
Do you want to go back a little bit and tell us about some of those details?
Well, actually, we just, over the course of a couple of days, a lot of us were traveling in the same area and we're just hanging out. And we just, I guess, we got talking. At the time, the Iraq war was on. And the only time everyone would get together was the 2 hours where the TV was on, was to watch the news. And so it was during one of those kind of news evenings when we were watching the TV that our eyes caught each other. And I thought, well, he's kind of cute. And we ended up talking and...
But it'd be the only good news story out of the Iraq War.
It was a good news story that day. And we were all we had such a great time traveling together. Okay. It was so much fun. So
you fell in love, but you parted ways because you had to go on with your itinerary. Is
and
that
to be
right?
Honest, I thought, you know, I'm only really 3 or 4 weeks into my travels. I mean, I was hoping to travel for the year,
of course.
And I was thinking that maybe just a holiday romance, and it was so lovely. But we didn't exchange telephone numbers, and I only told him I was staying in my cousin's house, Paul Quinn, in Sydney at some stage, and I wasn't quite sure when I was going to make it there. And I don't know why we never thought of exchanging addresses. I just can't figure it out when I look back at it. But I then went about my travels, and I went up through Thailand and made my way to Sydney. And I just kept talking about him. It was annoying my friend Micah every day. I'd say, I just think I really like that guy. And so eventually one day I was bugging her so much, and the telephone rang in the house that we were staying in Paddington in Sydney. And I picked up the phone, and on the end of the phone was this man's voice in an Austrian accent. And he said, hello, I'm trying to do the accent now. Is this Paul Quinn's house? And I went, yes. And he goes, I'm looking for his cousin Fiona. And I went, what? This is Fiona. And it turns out Uwe had tracked me down. And he told me he rang all the Quinns in Sydney to look for me.
That is really romantic.
It was pretty romantic. And then he ended up back in Sydney. He took a plane. 2 weeks later, he ended up in Sydney. And we then travelled around Australia a little bit together. And I think we figured out we were kind of maybe falling in love at that stage.
That's powerful, isn't it? That's a potent love story.
It was a love story. It was, yes.
So you managed to convince him to up sticks from Austria to Ireland.
And he'd never been to Ireland before, but I was like singing the Irish prayer. I was singing Irish songs. You know, you're out traveling around the world, and you just love being your Irish culture is so important to you. So literally, Uwe sold his apartment in Austria, and he packed his bag, gave away all his furniture, put all his, the most important things were his records and his speakers.
Great.
And everything else was given away to friends, and we came across on the boat on a St. Patrick's Day of 1991.
Yeah.
And it was the roughest ride ever. It was a storm on the way, and a lot of people were drinking, and it was a bit of an ugly crossing. But we got to Ireland. He'd never been here before, and at that stage we'd already been engaged. So it all happened pretty quickly.
It all happened pretty quickly. So you got back, and
it was a whirlwind.
And he settled, and you settled. You got married. You had 2 children together.
Yes, we did.
Do you want to tell me their names?
Luca, who's now 21, and Mila, who is 19.
Okay, gorgeous. Yeah. And so it was a really the great love story, in the sense that you were happy, and there were no issues no issues to be worried about.
Yes.
And now we're now in the middle of May as we speak, or towards the end of. And this is a tricky month for you, because we're heading towards June, and it's June the 14th, 4 years ago, 2015.
Yes.
And you were upstairs. Uwe was hopping on his bike in the back garden.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
And you looked down, and you said, you did what?
It was a beautiful Sunday afternoon, and he was going out in his bike. He was a motorbike rider. He was a very accomplished rider, I have to say, but I didn't want him to go this day. And I knocked on the window and I said, please, Uwe, don't go. And I kind of was trying to persuade him to come back in every kind of way I could, and allure him back in. And he said, look, I'll see you later. And he blew me a kiss, and off he went. And it was really it was maybe an hour and a half or so later, I'm not quite sure. It was quite soon afterwards, the doorbell rang and there were 2 police at the door. And I just knew instinctively this wasn't good news, and they were really with an urgency. They wanted to get me to the hospital, and they told me that Uwe had been in an accident.
Okay, and Luca was away that time with
Luca was in Spain with my mom.
Your mom,
yeah.
And Mila was
on a sleepover with friends.
Okay,
yeah.
In some ways, there was a small blessing in a world gone very dark.
Yes,
with that.
In a way it was, but in a way it wasn't, Ryan. I'll be honest with you, because I was so terrified that things would get out in social media, because there, you know, the impact of there was an accident that was announced on the radio, and I tried to ring everybody, and I was in such a desperate state to tell people to come and meet me in the hospital, and I was terrified that it would leak and my children would hear about it. Yeah. My son would hear about it in Spain before I got to tell him.
And they try not to, don't they? They try not to release the names of people.
But people talk,
do. I understand. You're quite right. So I understand your reservation, your concerns entirely.
Yeah.
The guards came and they said to you, we need to take you to the hospital. Is that right? And they brought you to one hospital first.
They brought me to the wrong hospital first.
Right.
But it was not their fault, because on the way to, from the accident scene, my husband was in a helicopter. He had suffered a different, he was going into cardiac arrest, and they brought him then to Tala. But they originally brought me to Beaumont Hospital for a head injury, but then they brought me to Tala. But we made it on time, so.
You went through at some speed, I'd say, reverse.
Oh, we were flying, and they were incredible. I could say that the guards were extraordinary that day. I would give them lots of credit for how they helped and dealt with the situation, which was difficult.
They got you to Tala. At this stage, it's probably hitting towards 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock?
No, it was more around, I think it was more like half one, quarter to two.
That's soon from the front door call. Did you know what you were facing into when you were going
to? No, I didn't. I knew because they had such a sense of urgency, and they, and we were flying up the M50, and they were kept trying to help. They took my phone from me because I was in such a panic. I couldn't contact anybody. I couldn't ring anybody. My mom was out on a golf course in Spain. My son wasn't, I didn't want to let him know. I didn't know who to ring. But I knew that it was really, really serious, obviously. But I didn't imagine what it would be like when I got to the hospital.
And what happened when you got to the hospital?
I was met by a chaplain, and then it all happened really, really, really quickly. And they asked me, would I like to go into the emergency room? Which, of course, I did. And I, thank God, I was with him when he took his last breath.
How long did you get to spend with Uwe?
It was just so short.
Short time.
More minutes.
Okay. And as we're talking 4 years later, I get the impression talking to you like you're in that room right now. Because reliving it like this, do you try not to in a given day, or do you try to embrace that moment? I mean, how does it sit with you?
Well, you know, I feel so grateful that I was with him when he died. I was with my father when he died, when my father had pancreatic cancer, and I was 18. And it's something, so you connect the person when you're with them, and I'm so grateful that I was with him, that I could be with him at that moment. So it's important to me, and I'm glad that I got to spend it with him.
And in that time, the brief time you spent with him, were you able to talk?
Yeah,
to him. Do you know what I mean?
I did speak to him, but I don't know if he heard me. But I don't know. I hope that he did. But you know, I feel him around me. Honestly, Ryan, I feel really grateful that I feel his presence. I feel his love. I feel.
Would you have talked to him this morning before you came in here?
Of course, I was shouting up to him up above.
What were you saying to him?
Well, I call him the Uvenator when I need his strength. He came from Arnold Schwarzenegger's territory. So,
So what did you ask the Uvenator?
Come on, the Uvenator! Come on, the Uvenator! Give me some strength. Here.
Is that what you were looking for today?
Yes, of course. Yes, I do draw. I speak to him a lot, and we talk about him. I think it's really important when somebody dies, for everybody, when they come to such trauma and sadness in their lives. And I'm not alone. You know, there's lots of people that are suffering, like me. That, you know, you remain that their name is you're allowed to speak their name constantly, and that they're always around you, and that you feel their presence.
And every time I find myself in a conversation with somebody who's grieving, and they do say that, please, to family and friends and neighbours,
No.
Don't, this is not a curse word.
Yes.
This is not a bad word. This is not a word that's going to trigger sadness. In fact, on the contrary.
On the contrary, yeah. It brings great happiness.
Say Uwe and tell us about the time you met him in the pub or he came down with the bike that wasn't working. You want to hear these stories?
I love the stories, and there's so many fun stories about him. He had a fabulous personality. He was bigger than life. He was 6'5". He had a big, broad smile, tall, handsome, and great crack. And, you know, I love when people talk about him, and a great testament to his to him and his life was that so many people turned up at his funeral, and a lot of people I didn't even know about.
Yeah.
And he had such a huge, wonderful impact in people's lives. And it's a great legacy and a lesson for us all. I feel that life is so precious.
Mm.
You don't know when you're going to be hit by a bus. And I think, maybe I'll be hit by a bus tomorrow. What am I leaving behind?
Mm.
Am I leaving behind harmony at home? Am I leaving behind great relationships at work? Am I leaving behind happiness with everybody who I touch and encounter? Or am I leaving behind negativity? And who wants to leave behind that?
I don't know.
So, you know, life is so, so precious.
You said something when we were chatting a few minutes ago, Fiona, about how you looked out the window as Uwe was getting on the bike, and you said you wanted to shout at him, don't go.
Yeah.
What, where did that come from, or what
I
were
had
you thinking
about
that?
I have to say I had an instinct that something was going to happen that day or over the course of that weekend. I just felt really uneasy that there was something out of sync with life. I can't explain it, and it just didn't feel right for me, and I didn't want him to go. That's all I can say.
It's as simple as that, and yet not simple at all.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, how old was your father when he died?
He was 48.
Very young.
Yeah.
And your mother?
My mom's alive.
Yeah.
My mom was 45 when my father died.
Right, she was a very young widow.
Yeah.
And how it's strange to ask you the age, but it just for people listening, it brings them right there in their own stories.
Yes.
If you don't mind sharing with us, how old you were when Uwe died?
46.
46.
Yeah.
So again, very terribly young.
And very similar, you know, stories. In fact, it's ironic that my mother and I were similar ages.
Very similar ages.
Yes. Yeah. I know.
Think about that.
I know. It is like a little bit of life history repeating itself, but. As well as that, it gives you an insight into life. And my mother has been extraordinarily strong and supportive to me, as of all of my friends. But, you know, when you lose somebody, you almost have this X-ray vision into other loss and sadness. And my mother has that with me, and I have it with other people. You can connect with people.
You get it.
You get it.
You get it.
And you also get... A gift of understanding that life is short and life is precious.
And empathy.
And you have empathy.
No question.
It's true.
There's a program on TV. I'm taking a swerve here, Fiona. Come with me. There's a program on TV called Desperate Houses. And I love watching it because you get an insight into the mind of people who've got garages full of junk.
Yes.
Or you know what I'm talking about. Or just stuff you don't need.
Yes,
and I remember
we all have that.
We all have a bit of it. And I remember one episode, there was a guy... who didn't want to get rid of his dad's mattress. Even though it was just sitting in the garage.
Yes.
Because of the connection. I could understand entirely why, but it's, you know where I'm going with this in some ways.
Yeah.
Because you've renovated your house.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of it.
You're in the middle of it now.
Yes.
So is everything seen through the prism of the past?
Yes, it is.
Uwe, of the future.
Yeah. It's been cathartic. It's been difficult to do. It's been, oh my gosh, just to pack up and go through somebody's items and things that you've been living with and everything you've accumulated over 20 years living in a house together. And yes, there's been a lot of stuff that I've decided to give away, but there's many things I will keep forever. But you know, it's opening up. It's a new beginning. So you can't always live. You can't live in the past. And I'm going into my fourth year now of losing Uwe. I will take from it all the good things that he's given to me in my life, and that includes the great friends, his love of music, his joy of food, the laughs, the great his stylishness. His, you know, he loved furniture. He was a very stylish person. Mm. And I will take that and move forward. And create a new beginning. That's what I have to do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I always quote Bob Geldof with grief because he's somebody who said something. I mean, he'd been through such a desperate amount of sadness himself.
Yeah.
And he said, you don't get over grief, but you learn to accommodate
it. Yeah.
That is a great way of putting it.
Yeah.
You can't just say that, turn off the grief button. There's no such thing, no switch.
You can't. So you can't, like, sometimes I would find, at times I would a little bit be frustrated with myself because I would want to be happy and you're out with people and you feel that, you know, everyone else is around you having a great time and you've got this deep sadness. So it's, you can't just jump sometimes from, you can't jump from sadness to joyousness without going through a process. And that process of grief is, you know, you have to accept it. And it's okay to cry, and people are very supportive when you do, and it's nothing to be ashamed of when you're sad.
No. We spoke briefly before the program, and I was saying to you that you were talking about crying and tears.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, I think that this country put a rug over tears for too long.
Yeah.
And that's got to stop. We have to be more emotionally attuned to each other. And there can't be a price for pain. You know, you just have to admit, yes, I am sad. Yes, let's have these conversations.
Yes, and also then how do you get yourself out of it as well, which is the main thing. So,
how are you coping?
Well, I mean, I really feel... I've been so lucky that I've grown up with Unislim around me in my life, and I've got the main rituals of Unislim that I have that I can tap into constantly. It would be that I have to keep myself healthy. I eat really well. That's so important because, you know, you can forget to eat when you're going through sadness. You can, or you can overeat.
Yeah.
You know, you can go one way or the other.
Yeah,
so healthy eating is really essential, and I've used that. I've constantly ate well, and I make sure that I eat my three meals a day now and my snacks, but sometimes I don't have a clue what to cook, because I also find, even though I'm surrounded by food and it's my life, I kind of sometimes get like a decision fatigue. And I think because I've got so many decisions to make, mm-hmm. particularly being a single mother as well, mm-hmm. and on my own and having lost my partner, that there, you just seem to be bombarded with decisions and you just can't cope. So part of that, my life now and Unislim is eating well and, of course, exercising. And exercise has been like an elixir for me. Sometimes I can't actually do it, and I can't even... Getting my runners on is brilliant, and as I'm sure many people will find, like, running is way out of reach for them. But even just going for a 15-minute walk, as you said, going down the pier, just putting on your shoes, going out, you'll never feel bad whenever you exercise.
How are you doing for the meals for one and cooking for one? Because it seems to be... I think it can be quite difficult if you're on your own to make... Because you want a nice meal.
Yeah, well, I love... You see, this is where I
go. There's only so much you can do.
Sometimes my children aren't around to cook for them. And so I will... I'm great at... I love doing meals for one will last for 2 or 3 days. So I love... I love having meals and then putting into the fridge and keeping the leftovers.
Yeah.
So I won't
But then you're having the same thing 3 nights in a row.
Oh, you don't mind. You put one in the freezer.
Oh, the freezer. Okay.
I can inspire you with my cookbook.
I have in my hand. Tell me about this that I'm holding here. Whatever that dish looks delicious. Looks like a chicken curry.
That's chicken curry. Absolutely lovely. So. I created this book called Delicious, partly because I would be in the office nearly every day saying, what are you guys having for dinner tonight? Even though, this is my work.
You're having a vicarious banquet.
Vicarious
banquet.
I want to know what everybody's having to feel inspired. So I created this book of all the inspirational recipes we have in Unislim. They're fabulous recipe book. Really helpful for you and really easy to do. And they're all contemporary and suitable for all the family.
Are the children well? They're not children now, but are the young people? Well.
My son is now playing football for Drogheda United, so he's doing really good. He's a goalkeeper. I have to give him a shout out. Cheer. And my daughter is in college, and they're fabulous. They're a joy to have in my life, and we have so much fun together.
Yeah.
And you know, it's onwards and upwards.
And Uwe lives on.
He lives on. He does,
and will continue to do so. Frank in Dublin 16 said, "This is a wonderful interview. Our loved ones will always be with us in our heart and our memory, or spirit, which is well said." And Maeve says, "I was with my mother when she passed away, and the nurses kept telling me to talk to her, that the hearing is the last sense to go. So I'm glad I listened to them. No words were left unsaid. And I'm sure your guest's husband heard everything she said to him as he was passing. And hopefully that's a comfort." Fiona Gratz, it's been really lovely talking to you. And thank you for your honesty and your candor. And as I say, I hope that those who are in a similar or even the same type of situation as you were in today will take some comfort by the kindness of your words today. So wish you every happiness in the future.
Thank you.
Fiona Gratz for joining us at 11 minutes to 10. Oh, let's see what's happening there. That's gone. Can you take that outside? Will that be okay? Take the break from there, if we can. Just bear with us 1 second. We'll sort this out. There it is.